Well, we're here on the 31st of July with Patricia Proudfoot and Graham Zellman, Richard Mackey, and we're looking forward to talking to you about your career here as a law student and subsequently. So can you, could we start early on and start with your childhood? And you were born in Saskatchewan.
Born in Corona, Saskatchewan in 1928. My family my dad was a farmer, and I was one of 10 children, the last of the 10. And there's still five of us living. And we moved from Saskatchewan. Those were the years where, needless to say, you won't remember. I only remember part of it vaguely because I was 5 years of age. But depression and drought. We were in the Corona was in southeast of Regina, and that was the Dust Bowl, the very famous Dust Bowl of Saskatchewan. And we had a succession of years that where there was no crop. And my father decided that this won't do, and he packed us all in a car and a homemade trailer, and we drove to British Columbia, literally and actually. We're still trying to, I've got one sister alive that's 94, and we're still trying to figure out lots of things that happened. We can't remember, so none of us can remember certain things. We know we were all in the car.
How did you get in?
My dad and mother in the front seat, my sister next to me in the middle, and myself on the mother's knee. And the others, two were left behind. One sister was a teacher and one was in a clerical position. They were left behind. And my brother, I had only one brother, there's nine girls, he came up in a box car with animals and chickens and whatever. So that there were the others. There was eight of us left, seven of us left, and two of us, five, were in the back seat. And Dad had, we had this old, as I recall it, an old McLaughlin Buick, and Dad had built, you know, like the British cabs have a little jump seat.
Yes.
You know, facing that's it. He had built two little seats there, so there was three kids sitting this way and two sitting this way.
And this was the days before seat belts, I expect.
Oh yeah, well, mind you, Professor, we were crammed in that car so tight, there was nothing. Nobody would have been thrown clear. We were all jammed in. Mm. We cannot remember. None of us can remember where we slept. My 94-year-old sister has racked her brain. Says I don't know what in heaven's name we did. Well, I said we must have done so because Dad had no money. He arrived literally with empty pockets into British Columbia. And we sort of ate along the way as the best I can recall. And I don't even remember how long it took us, but it took us many, many days. We came through a lower highway through next to the United States because we came up through trail. We kept through the Kootenays.
What year was this, dude?
1933, October.
So in the peak of the height of the Depression.
Height of the Depression, 1933. Dad had been up earlier and had rented a fruit farm. And you talk about going from lumber to law. Well, Dad went from grain farming to fruit farming. And
Did he own the farm?
No, he rented the farm.
In Saskatchewan?
Oh, in Saskatchewan, yeah. He owned it, but he lost it. You know, he lost it through taxes.
There was no money.
There was no money. Yeah, he lost the farm. So he rented the fruit farm, and he learned how to grow fruit and grow vegetables, and we had animals. We had cows for a while, and that we came up with us. We always had food. I don't ever remember a day of hunger, ever. But I remember we had no money.
That's what they say about the Depression, that there was no money.
There was no money.
And if you had a job, you were set. Yeah. But if you didn't, you were out of luck.
Well, Dad had some exceptional extra skills. He was a really good with his hands. He was a good carpenter. And he was able to get odd jobs. For instance, he would do work. There was a machine shop at Rutland. This is where we moved to Rutland, outside of Kelowna. It's about, you probably know where it is, probably about 3-4 miles out of Kelowna. I'm not quite sure.
It's north, isn't it?
Slightly north, towards Vernon, yeah. And east, northeast, actually. Rutland had a population of a few hundred. I would say anywhere between 200 and 300. And it had a corn, the main highways. Now it goes up to Big White, the ski village. It had a garage, needless to say, a general store, a machine shop. This was all farms. And on the other corner was a bake shop, and that's about it. And he often did work for the garage in exchange for gasoline or whatever. And the people were incredibly generous, the farmers around. I guess they got such a shock when his family of all these kids arrived in October and brought vegetables, fruits for us, yeah. And we had chickens and we had the cow. So I really don't remember any hardship in terms of any food or any like that, but money there was none.
We found your name in the annual, was it Fallman's, is that how you?
Fallman.
Fallman.
Fallman was my maiden name, F-A-H-L-M-A-N. German extraction. So we spoke German. Actually, in Saskatchewan, we spoke German, as I recall, all the time.
Was it a German community?
Yes. Very definitely a German community, and I think half the people were related one to another. I think, you know, because they sort of congregated in that part. Yeah, my mother was born in Canada. She was born in Kronow, I think. Not sure, but I think my dad came over from Europe on a ship with his parents when he was 2 years old, which would be he was born in 1891. And until we moved to British Columbia, they all sort of lived in that area. Went to school. We registered for school. I must have started school. I remember going to school. Now, did I start then, or did they wait till the next year? I doubt it. I think they probably started off for school because we were all in school.
If you were born in 28, so
I was born in 28.
Four or five?
I would be five when we arrived in British Columbia. So being as October, that would be late for registration because school, but they may have allowed me to be registered late. I don't know, because you normally register in July or August for September. So all I know is we went to school. Really nothing untoward. I was not the brightest student and not the, I liked sports, and if there was something to do with sports, I would prefer that to doing academic stuff. I mean, I'm quite frank about that.
Was it the
school was easy for me too. I did not have any problems in grade school or high school. I really quite floated. It was easy. I did all my 1 to 12 I did in Rutland, and then senior matric, which was equivalent to first year university, I did in Kelowna. Graduated in 1946. Yes, 1946.
What was it like in the war years and the the Okanagan. Were the orchards busy by then?
Yes. I was a teenager. We had a cadet corps. I remember that. I think I've got an old picture of our cadet corps and doing marching. Because see, at high school in 1946, I'd be 18. Let me see. 1946 when I came to university. Yeah, I'd be 18 when I came to university. I graduated when I was 17, and did my first year university at 18. So there was sort of talk amongst us that, you know, maybe we should join up and all this, and you know, we'd be just doing a lot of talking, and my mother and father got wind of that talk, and they said they didn't think that was what we would be doing. It was discouraged.
I suppose a lot of the girls would join the what were they called? The Wrens and the
Wrens and the Wecks and there was a lot of talk, but mm-hmm. none of us, because we were all 17.
They were just 18, too young.
We were just too young. They were taking them at that age, but we were, because I don't recall anybody from our group of kids in my high school joining up. No. And then, of course, the war was over in 45, and this was 46 then. What happened then when I came to university, of course, the university was very crowded then. You have to remember, 46, the war ended in 45. In 46 and 47, 48, the vets that were at the university, because they had government permitted them and gave them an education. Mm-hmm. So you must have heard about Acadia Camp and these places that were for married people, and we had our classes had a lot of service fellows in it, because we as 18-year-old, 19-year-old girls, we suddenly saw all these called older men that were returning.
23 or 24.
That's right, 25 and 26. Yeah. They were really. So the university was quite crowded. If you probably can go back and find out those figures, but we had large classes at the university. Mm-hmm. Large classes. I had an economics 100 class that we did in the auditorium. And I have a faint recollection of about 700 students in that class. And I have a very great recollection of sitting at the back. Two or three of us would sit at the back, and we could hear absolutely nothing. And, you know, in the economics, the blackboard seemed to be miles away. And we had a professor there. God rest his soul. I'm sure he's not alive anymore. Dr. Drummond. I think he was our professor, Dr. Drummond. And, none of us could just really understand what he was at. So we had to spend our time reading the black textbook, the big black textbook, Economics 100. That class I remember. All the classes were very large. Then, of course, I did arts. I did history and psychology. I frankly wasn't sure whether I was... I struggled with university, mm-hmm. with studies. Mm-hmm. I didn't struggle in high school. Mm-hmm. I just didn't have any problems. I used to be able to just do it. Exams didn't bother me. I passed and I started university, but I had problems at mm-hmm. university. I had to work very, very hard.
Well, you chose two subjects there that do take a bit of bit of mental exertion.
Well,
psychology.
My idea of the psychology was always that if things didn't if I didn't make it in law, I would come back and build on the psychology and do student counseling or something of that nature. Going to the counseling somewhere, that was my thought. I didn't have to. Although my first year. Law was such an incredible poor year. I did so badly. Well, one thing, I had to leave home, and I had never left home. I was plain homesick. Accommodation, I lived in a private home. because there was no accommodation for students. And there was a call out by the university. They needed accommodation for students. And a lot of private homes, if they had an extra room that was suitable, responded. And I happened to get a very lovely family up on in Dunbar, 29th and Mackenzie, and they had two lovely small boys, and I, for doing some weekend babysitting the odd time, and very rarely, at maybe a night out or something like that, I had very cheap room and board, because I had to put myself through university. I had very, very little help from home. Well, there just wasn't any money for it, but my family was insisting that education was incredibly important. Neither of my parents had any education. My dad had three winters, and I think my mother had about the same three winters. Dad spoke English incredibly well, wrote it well. Mother struggled. She wrote her English phonetically. I used to love her letters when they came, because everything was written just the way it sounded, and it was just beautiful. And but the fact is, she taught herself to read and write. And so I was incredible. They were very, very determined that the kids, we would have an education.
Did your older siblings also go to university?
Nobody went to university. I was the only one that went, but I had three teachers in the family, a nurse, and my brother was in the RCMP for many years, and then ultimately went into gas inspector or something or other. Came out of the RCMP. Two sisters got married very young. They were the only two that weren't really particularly interested in education, but the rest, there were everybody was, my eldest sister was always in clerical with, she worked in municipal halls and that kind of thing. And then the second was a teacher. I had a nurse, there was a nurse as well. Three teachers, a nurse, my brother in the RCMP, and a clerical, then myself.
Can I ask?
Sure.
Before we go on too far, about the orchard.
Yes.
My dad's family is from Vernon area.
Yeah, I see that. Yes.
A 10-acre orchard. What did you grow?
We started out because we had to first clear most of this land. Mm. It was full of stumps and stuff. Mm. And rocks. I remember we had to pick an incredible number of rocks up. So we started out, we had to plant the trees. We started an orchard from square one. And we planted the trees. And in the meantime, we grew ground crops. Beans, tomatoes, we had some raspberries. But beans and tomatoes were the cash crops. Until the trees grew up. Now, and what we did was, Dad had there was a Japanese fellow who was a fellow that did sharecropping, and he came and lived in a small house on the farm with us, and there was some kind of a sharing of the crop, and he basically sort of looked after that. But the dad provided the equipment and the cultivating and that kind of thing. But he looked after, he used to make sure that the plants were planted and watered and that kind of thing.
Was irrigation, so irrigation
We had
was
irrigation
already.
Flumes, yes. We had flumes that ran along the end of the farm. I'm trying to remember how large this place was. I can't remember.
They tended to be five or ten acres.
Well, if I was going to guess, I'd say 10 acres. When I look at what 5 acres looks like now, I would say we had 10 acres, and in fact, we had more because we had ultimately leased another piece. And by the time we were finished, we had more. But we had to plant the trees, and we planted cherries, prunes. apricots, apples, of course. And my dad, for a while, tried grapes. We had a kind of a hillside that was facing the right direction, south. And he planted grapes, but it was too sandy. They didn't, you know, grapes need shale and that kind of more solid soil. It was too sandy. They didn't do well, so we didn't continue on with that. But
they say that apples take 5 years to...
Your trees, yes. As a matter of fact, most of your fruit takes up to five, six years before you get any kind of a decent crop, yes.
So by the 40s, it was in place.
It was growing. It was beginning to go because we worked to see. I worked in it when we went to school. After school, we worked in the orchard. Oh,
and you were in the labor supply.
We were in the summer. Yeah, we worked in the orchard from very young. Yes, and we also when we did, we didn't have ours. Weren't Burton? We went to the neighbor. We pick cherries of the neighbors for spending money to try and put some spending money together. Yeah. It wasn't easy. I don't mind saying it was not easy. And pursuing and I was determined I would go to university. I'm not even sure what put it in my mind because there was nobody, we had no relatives that were at the university, we had no lawyers in the family. But from a very, very young age, I wanted to be a lawyer.
Did you know about it?
I didn't know anything about it. Other than I tell you what I would do. Dad would go down. We'd take some fruit downtown or something or other, and I was always with him. I was sort of at his heels, and while he was busy doing things, we had this place called Grower Supply. And he always, every time you'd have to go in and pick up fertilizer. Wire, whatever, and I'd find the courthouse as a kid. I was often kicked out of the courthouse in Kelowna because I was sitting there all by myself, and I don't know why.
Was it cool?
It was maybe you're right, but you're very true. It might have been cool, and that's my way. But that's where I went. I don't know. I got this idea I would be a lawyer, and but at the same time, I thought, God, I don't know. Maybe I'll not make it. And so it was kind of a struggle, yes.
Did the teachers support you? Did you have good teachers?
We had good, yes. I think that's probably was one of the problems. Suddenly you're into a class of 700 or even, let's say, 100. Mm-hmm. Suddenly you're in a class. I'm going to a school where the class is 10 or 11, you know, in high school because kids dropped out. Not many kids on the farming area continued through. I think there's four of us continued through to a professional level. My best friend became a teacher. One guy went into business. One became a doctor. And the other one went to the United States, and I'm not sure what he did in the United States. But that was, so you see, we were used to teachers that were, it was one-on-one if you were struggling with something, it was one-on-one. And we had, to me, I thought we had very good teachers in school, even though we were at a small country school, we had good teachers. Going from there, then I went to Kelowna Senior High. There again, the classes weren't large. While I didn't know the teachers that well, I seemed to do all right. So when I got to university and I was suddenly faced with being away from home, homesick as hell, and these large classes.
Did anyone else from Kelowna?
No, nobody else from Kelowna. There was one young woman my age, of course. She came from the Kootenays, and we kind of became friendly because coincidentally, she went to live with a family, and that family, the lady there and the lady in my place, they played cards together in a card club. So they talked about they've got these students. And we met, and she was from the Kootenays, and mm-hmm. I was from the Okanagan. We became friendly. But neither of us had any money, so when I don't ski, I had no money to go up the mountain. I worked at three jobs. I worked at Safeway, cashiered. I worked in a machine shop, working at presses, cutting out things.
This was
in Vancouver.
In Vancouver.
I worked at Hudson Bay on Saturdays in the men's shoe department, making sure that a pair of shoes got in the box for 55 cents an hour. Picked up my pay at the end of the day. Yeah. But I say I was very fortunate in having a 45. I paid for room and board. I paid $45, and they were incredibly nice people. I was well looked after. She packed my lunch for me. I didn't have to buy lunch. Yeah, which was a little bit exceptional because there was a lot of people living, a lot of kids living in the same way as I was in a home, but they didn't have the sort of the attention that I got. And I had a very, very lovely room. We were 29th and Dunbar. I had a back room that's quite high, and you had a view of the city from my room. Yeah. And they had two very nice little boys, a 4 and a 5 year old, that I got quite used to and was able to manage if the parents went out, I guess. And their room was across from mine, and of course they used to fool around sometime and disturb. And I'd say, "You guys get into bed, and I don't want to hear another peep out of either of you," as I was studying.
How long were you there?
I was there about 7 years.
Was that so?
Yeah, right up to the time. Mm-hmm. I graduated with my arts, then I went into law, and I went all the way down there. Yeah.
You must have treated you like family.
Yeah. It was. I was, in that way, I was really quite fortunate.
Do you keep in touch with? Did you?
I did, but both parties are deceased. The boys, I kind of lost track of. One moved somewhere, and I kind of lost track of. They got married, and one was divorced, and I sort of lost track in the last years.
Those other kids you mentioned, who became a doctor and one.
Yes.
Were they here, or was that they come?
No,
there?
And he was a doctor in Burnaby, but my understanding is he's passed away. The teacher, she still lives in Rutland. Believe it or not, she taught in Rutland. She taught Rutland and Ellison, which is the next sort of area. Mm-hmm. She's still there. Lyle, who went off to the United States. I have no idea what happened to him. We used to, for years, have a reunion, a class reunion, a dinner. We'd have a dinner, a high school, our Rutland High School dinner. And the first year, because we only had 11 kids graduate from high school, you can imagine. It didn't take long for those 11.
In the whole of Kelowna.
Well, in Rutland.
In Rutland.
That was, yeah. Mm-hmm. There weren't that many more in high school there probably was, but in senior matric there wasn't that many more. But we didn't know that we did a Rutland High School reunion, and we did that for years and years and years. And what we did, first of all, we thought, well, this is quite ridiculous. This is not very many people. So we started to invite the class ahead of us and the class behind us. And it's only 3 years ago we stopped doing it because, frankly, there weren't that many people left. And those that were left, some were incapacitated, that, you know, somebody had a heart condition that couldn't travel. Somebody had Alzheimer's, and, you know, all kinds of things happened, so we had to discontinue. But we met every year for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And kept up this graduating class dinner, and it was fun. It was fun. But the others, I think there's only the teacher, my friend, my best friend Emily. She's still very much alive.
Would you go home in the holidays? And
yes, I go home. I was home in April. I'm going back in September. I usually go up two times or three times a year, yes, and visit my family. because I have, you have to appreciate with 10 kids in the family, and I'm the only one that didn't have children. My husband passed away 15 years ago, 16 years ago. We didn't have children, but all the others did. So believe me, there is a tremendous number of nieces and nephews. And many live in the Kelowna area, you know, in that general area, between Kelowna and Vernon. I've got one great niece that lives in Vernon. Do you go to Vernon?
I'm there every year, yeah.
Well, there's a fish shop there.
Oh.
A fish shop downtown Vernon?
Mm-hmm.
That's my great niece, and they have that fish shop, her and Bob, yes.
So you had a good community there, a rural community.
Oh,
and
yes.
Big family.
Big family, yeah. And I'm very much in touch with many of them, yes, and certainly with my sisters, yes. Two of them live in Kelowna, there's four others besides myself surviving. Two live in Kelowna, one lives in Summerlin, she was a teacher, one lives in Kamloops, she was a teacher, and the one that was a nurse lives in Kelowna. And the other sister was one of the ones that got married very young, and she lives in Kelowna. And they had eight children, and all live within 2 miles of her. Can you believe it? The whole lot of them. Isn't that odd?
Well, it suggests that there must be some, that the economy must be strong enough to support them.
The economy is good. They're all doing very well. Well, I'm trying to think. Most of them have now sort of retired because. I know it's hard to imagine, but I've got nephews that are 70 years of age, you know. Mm. So, but they weren't all farmers. Mm. My sister's husband was a farmer, but the boys weren't. There was only really one that was on the farm for long, and they just didn't care for farming. They're very bright, these boys. They're doing all kinds of engineering things, and one was a dentist, and they did things, but there's only one that stayed on the farm, yeah.
You said your dad was a handyman.
Oh, he was very handy.
So
there's no doubt about it. My dad was very, very handy, and it's amazing, yes. I was just talking about that with my niece, that they've got a good work ethic, all the family. And I said, well, it comes from your home, you know. If your dad's out working every day and mother's looking after 10 kids, eight kids, always, it was always six, at least six or seven kids at home, you know. As we grew older, we got out of the fold, and I was the last to leave to go to university.
So, at university, did you manage to recreate a group of friends?
No.
Did you have a good...
Not a real large group, no. No, in law school, once I got to law school, it was better. But the arts, I have to be honest, it was just so big, as I recall, coming from a small town. I did not. The other thing that was I worked. See, Saturdays when kids were doing things, you'd hear this chat about going to Mount Baker to ski or go up wherever, Seymour Gross, wherever they went. And I was working. And two or three of us, the odd time, would go bowling. I remember that, we'd go bowling. Actually, I worked at Safeways, and and I relieved during the summer, I was relieving. And I actually had some friends there. We'd go bowling together. But it always was something very inexpensive. You know, we'd go to the Hollywood Theater's closed now.
Down here on...
Yeah, on Broadway.
Down, yeah.
Well, we'd go to a double header there for 25 cents, you know, two movies for 25 cents. I always think about that when that theater closed, a lot of memories went there. you know, if you're trying to work, it's very difficult. No, no, I did not have, and I didn't join a fraternity, a sorority again. It wasn't my thing either. I just wasn't really, I was not that interested in sorority things. And
but you made university work, obviously, for you and you.
I worked very hard, sir. I worked very hard. I had a bad time my first year. I had to write supplementals. And I didn't, actually, my first year was so bad I didn't want to go back. I said to my dad, I'm not going back. It's too hard, et cetera, et cetera. And he just insisted I go back. He said, you don't start something that you don't finish. You wanted this, you go back. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, it sort of turned around. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I didn't run into problems till my third year. Oh, dear. Wills and trusts and constitutional law. Mm-hmm. How troubling these were. And I thought for sure that I had passed, I think it was wills and trusts, and what happened was the reverse. I passed constitutional, if I remember, and failed wills and trusts. Because Dr. Kennedy, is that name?
We heard about him yesterday from Leon
Gilbert. Yeah. Gilbert Kennedy, what a nice man, incredible.
I think Leon Getz mentioned him yesterday.
Tutored me during the summer.
Mm-hmm. Did he?
Absolutely. He was so, he knew that I had worked so hard. He said, we're going to get you through this. It's not this, you're going to graduate. Mm-hmm. Tutored me and I wrote the summer. During the summer. Yeah. Nice man. I just can't say enough nice things about Gilbert Kennedy. He was well, he was very conservative in many ways, but he was a really, really nice man. And so were all the professors. I noticed that Professor Bourne just died not recently. Well, he was around a long time. We had several reunions at the law school, but now I have to be truthful. There just isn't enough of us left. We have the occasional lunch. Another classmate, Owen Dolan, who's still around, and he's still practicing, goes to the office. He periodically arranges a lunch, and then he phones around to say who's still around. And there was Owen and Dolores Holmes, formerly Branca, she's still around. Myself, John Montgomery, from the law firm McCray Montgomery. I think he's still retired from the office. Glenn Gates, who was up to just a couple of years ago, but he passed away. I think that's maybe one of the Edwards boys still around. But I can't remember when we had the last one, but it's quite a while ago because I think we had about 28, 30 people at it.
In this interview, this alumni profile from 2005, you mentioned Angelo Branca, Tom Hurley, Hugh McGivern.
Three of the best criminal lawyers in the city. Yeah, and Angelo Branca was one of my mentors. There's absolutely no doubt about that. Once I was appointed to the first court in 1971, and from that point on, to the provincial court. Well, Angelo, the Branca family they lived not very far from where I lived, and Dodie and I spent a lot of time studying together. That was one of the real friends I had once I got to the law school, because she was there. And I spent a lot of time at the Branca home, and we studied together a lot.
That's Dolores.
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 D-O-L-O-R-E-S. Branca. And ate a lot of excellent Italian food, and we studied. We'd have these crazy sticky things everywhere. Every time we opened a cupboard door, there was a legal question, or there was a legal principle there. That's how we studied. Crazy, I know. But, yes, yeah, so her father, needless to say, I got to know him quite well. And 1971 when I was appointed. He was with me right through his door was always open, and he was certainly a mentor of mine.
And the other two, Tom Hurley and
Tom Hurley. Tom was a very colorful man. Tom, I think one of the, I used to sometimes, if I had a spare period, go down and sit in the courthouse and get into the courtroom to listen to these two if they were on a case, either one or the other, there was for defense. And George Murray would often be on the, he was a colleague after, he was on the prosecution side. And to listen to these two defense lawyers, they were magical to me in the courtroom. After their cross-examinations were, and Tom had a bit of a, when in the provincial court when he was in there, he had a bit of a nipping problem. He'd nip in, and we used to laugh a lot when Tom would hang onto the table. But he never lost his train of thought. He never lost what he was doing. Mm-hmm. But we often noticed that he came into the courtroom in the provincial court having had a nip. And don't quote me on that.
No.
But he was a very colorful character, very colorful, and just an excellent defense lawyer. And the other one you mentioned, Hugh McGivern?
McGivern, yeah.
Yeah, McGivern was, his son Jack was a provincial court judge, and Hugh also was a defense counsel. Mostly, Hugh did civil as well, but a lot of criminal. My first office, when I opened my office as a practicing, I opened up in the Crown Building, which was 615 West Pender Street. I was on the second floor, and Hugh's office was on the third floor. And Hugh was tremendous help to me, tremendous help, yeah. Again, a very nice man, and had a, and his son Jack was a wonderful guy, good provincial court judge, quite lenient. Everybody wanted to get into Jack's court because he was quite lenient. But nice, yeah. These were three very colorful. There were others, believe me, but I felt these were just, and say Branca particularly was my mentor.
We've got these set questions, so we should go back in time a little bit.
Hope I give you the same answers.
Well,
you know, you get older, you change.
Oh, well, go here ahead. We've got, tell me about your first impressions of your professors and classmates or legal education.
My first impression of
the law school. Yeah.
Of law school. Well, we were in various buildings, mostly the huts, the famous, ever famous huts.
Yep.
We were a class of about 160, I believe, we started. We had some incredibly excellent professors, and we had what I consider to be some not so excellent. But we had Dean Curtis. Did you ever get any information? Because, you know, Dean Curtis had a lot of history and stuff tucked away some places.
There's a lot, I think, in the archive.
There must
in
be,
the university archives.
You know, Dean Curtis knew everybody. He came to one of our reunions. In fact, he came to several, but one of our more later ones. And he came in and he knew something about everybody. He truly did. He absolutely knew something personal about every one of us. The man was just an absolute genius. And he and President McKenzie at the time lectured, President McKenzie lectured in international law, I think, and I think probably Dean Curtis as well. And I, truthfully, we learned nothing, but we got some incredibly interesting stories. But any relationship to what he was lecturing about and what we were getting on our examinations were quite, but he was in, they were both in very, very good, very, very interesting fellows.
I think McKenzie was a First World War vet.
Yes.
And Nova Scotian.
Yes.
And the president of the university.
Yeah, right. Norman McKenzie.
Norman, right.
Norman McKenzie was our president.
I didn't realize he taught a course here. That's the first time.
International law. I'm not sure that he was actually, he may have been sort of a guest lecturer, but he seemed to be, he certainly gave more than one lecture, so he was lecturing, and it was international law. I'm sure of that. And Curtis was too. What, Curtis taught something else as well, but I can't remember.
See, I remember Charles Bourne in the connection.
And Charles Bourne, yes. Did Charles do some constitutional?
I only remember
that. I can't remember that. I always remember Westlake. This is, I thought, interesting. Westlake did labor law. And I think he also did some administrative law. I can't quite remember. They were half, labor, I think, was a full course, but men, I think, was half course. We had, my first year, I think I took 11 courses. I think two were half courses. But Westlake, I always remember Westlake, he did labor law. And we used to sit around, a bunch of students, and say, why would we want to take labor law? What in heaven's name is labor law going to do us any good? You know, talk about, that's one of the big, one of the massive feature now in terms of law. God, lawyers are doing nothing but, there's lawyers, I know lawyers in this office in this city that are doing just labor law. Yeah. But that was sort of the thinking at the time. I mean, what's this course going to do for us? Ray Herbert was domestic, they called it domestic relations, as I recall. Ballum did contracts. He was in the commercial. He ultimately moved, married one of the students and moved to Calgary, Ballum. I think he went into writing books. When last heard.
So were these core courses that everyone took?
These are core courses, yeah. Mortgages, now let me see, who did mortgages? McIntyre. I think his son came.
Jimmy?
Jimmy, well that was a son. Malcolm was the father. I think it was M.M., but it, certainly I know it's Malcolm. I think he did mortgages. That was another course. Evidence. Now, who did evidence? I know that Vic Dreyer came up as a guest lecturer, who became a Supreme Court judge, or was a Supreme Court judge. I can't remember who did evidence. But these were core subjects. Reed, what was Reed's first name, did torts.
Not
we used to call him
Bob,
Pappy.
Bob Reed.
Frederick Reed.
Fred, that's right. We used to call him Pappy. Yeah. Pappy Reed. trying to think.
Was Carruthers here then?
Yes. He was later, though, I think, as I recall. I can't remember my evidence professor. I can't remember them.
Which of them made the strongest impression?
Probably, we always enjoyed Ray Herbert. Mm-hmm. He was very clear. I think he was very good. There were lots of them. It depended a lot on the subject. I was probably more interested in domestic relations law than I was in constitutional law. So the net result is that professor probably impressed you more than the other. I think that's probably it. McIntyre was very good.
What is domestic relations? I mean, I'm not a...
Family law.
Family
law. Now called, I don't know what you call it now, do they call it family law?
Just family law.
Family law, yeah, domestic relations we called it. And it was just family law, yeah. I think they called it family relations for a while. Well, the provincial government has this legislation, they brought in the legislation, of course, they called it family relations, and then they've apparently come out with a new act again. I was heard the other day, I went sitting with a friend and who's still practicing, and she does nothing but family law. And she said, there's a new act out again, yeah. So if you're doing family law, you've got another hurdle. But I, 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 truthfully, I cannot remember the last, it was miserable in the huts. That was not the best venue, I can tell you. And we,
they were cold, really, or drafty?
Yeah, they were not pleasant. They were down below, they were all sort of in a row down further. We finally got to the law building in our third year. And there's got to be an old picture here somewhere of us carrying the books over, that famous picture. There's a very famous picture of moving the law faculty. And we carried the books. You know, there's a row of students all wandering along. Yeah, and I know that picture's here somewhere because it was in the old building. So it must have missed, and I'm sure they wouldn't throw it out because it's history. We moved into here, and of course, but it was the third year. So when I walked into this building with all this lavish to me luxury, I thought, holy smoke, how can you, kids have really got it a far more pleasant studying atmosphere. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can we break for a few minutes?
Yes.